wish this place had windows.
Sometimes.
I really, it's just, oh, so we knew, you know.
Sometimes it's just.
I know. Oh, okay. We're here on business. 113794, United States versus Ralph Shannon, and it's Miss Christensen.
Yes, it is. Good morning, Your Honor. Counsel.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I represent the appellant Ralph Shannon in this matter. We're here today on a condition of supervised release that bans Mr. Shannon from accessing all sexually explicit materials during his lifetime term of supervised release. I'll address the standard of review issue first because I think that's kind of forefront in the briefs. And it's important because it's a difference between abuse of discretion and plain error, which always makes a difference to a defendant. And an abuse of discretion is obviously a serious error of judgment or legal error, and in this case we argue that it is. It's certainly not plain error. The government reads Engle that notice is not required, and notice and error in this case are intertwined because of the manner in which this condition was imposed. The condition was imposed after Mr. Shannon was sentenced to 28 days, and it was part of the judge's findings of the, and imposition of judgment. After that, the judge did say, do the parties have anything further? However, the judge had already made a ruling, already imposed the condition, and at that point, there was no chance to object. The defense counsel did talk about housing for the term of imprisonment, which, of course, was forefront on Mr. Shannon's mind because he has many medical issues. But we create, if that's plain error, if that's a failure to object, then we create the situation where a defendant cannot get abusive discretion review of supervised release conditions. Because if there's no notice beforehand, then no opportunity to meaningfully object to something that infringes on a defendant's First Amendment rights, then we get here and we're in plain error. And it leaves this court in a difficult position of adjudicating a constitutional issue on plain error review.
So now, would you help me with this?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there a clear basis in the record for banning adult pornography, since Mr. Shannon essentially acknowledged that he's seeking out sites that claim to involve models over the age of 18, but involved individuals that appear to be less than 18? And if he's using the legal adult pornography category to dodge the child pornography laws, why shouldn't a court act to prevent that by imposing a ban?
Well, Your Honor, I see it in a different way. I don't think he's using it to dodge the child pornography. The fact is that child pornography is illegal, and most adult pornography is legal. So he's using a legal means, perhaps ill-advised given his history, but a legal means to do this sort of behavior. There are other ways, obviously, that don't involve pornography that people do this. I think in this case it's more of a therapy issue about the boundaries of what he should be and should not be doing, similar to someone who's an alcoholic or who has a food addiction.
I understand that perspective, but if we're applying an abuse of discretion standard, it's a little more sympathetic to the district court's decision. Right. And I guess I have a similar concern here. It looks like Mr. Shannon was a pretty difficult fellow to supervise. He was very defiant, trying basically to see how close he could come to the child pornography line without crossing that line.
I agree, Your Honor. He had been on supervised release for a year prior to the revocation. Mm-hmm. And it was only when internet access was allowed that he kind of fell off. And that, again, is the problem in this case. He was not revoked because of the accessing of the pornography websites. He was revoked because of the webcam. But the record does contain that he was doing that. However, you know, and there's the part in the record where he says he wants to know what the rules are, and he's someone that will push the envelope about what exactly these rules are, trying to understand his limits. And again, that's something that probably could be dealt more with in therapy than than a lifetime ban on any sexually explicit materials, which is overbroad, as we also discuss. Our concern is not necessarily whether this is inappropriate for overall, but the judge didn't make any findings regarding that and seemed concerned mostly about viewing child pornography, and that's the only findings we have in the record, or something that looks like child pornography. That's a far cry from the ban on all sexually explicit materials. I think if it had been narrowly tailored to what the judge found, that he should not be looking at things that are child pornography or meant to look like child pornography, that might be a more specific ban that does not implicate the First Amendment. So to move on to the First Amendment issue, this court has acknowledged that there's a circuit split in some respects on this issue. It was in an unpublished order, the Jacques case, United States versus Jacques, which is out of the same district. And the court held that there was this issue, and this court has not come down either way on the ban. Of course, the courts are split. The Third Circuit, the Ninth Circuit say that this ban is overbroad, too vague, not tied to the purposes of supervised release. And there are, of course, courts on the other side, as in all court splits. But what they all are concerned with are the judge's rulings and how the judge ties those rulings to the nexus of the case and the First Amendment implications.
One of the problems that's come up in the prior case law has been vagueness.
Correct.
Given this judge's reliance on the statutory definition, I would think that that's not part of the problem here.
I think vagueness is part of the problem in that it's always going to be hard to specifically categorize sexually explicit materials. The statute makes this condition better than some that are involved in other cases, but it does not define enough of a limitation that would keep from banning things like newspapers and books and other internet sites, watching TV. I know in certain cases this court has expressed that you can't watch TV without seeing some sexually explicit conduct nowadays, and I think that's only getting worse. So that's where the vagueness comes in. I think a bigger concern is, of course, the lack of findings about this implicating Mr. Shannon's First Amendment rights. And there are no findings because he was not aware of the condition to make findings. We would obviously prefer to be here in a well-litigated First Amendment issue. We are not, so we are asking the court to remand for those findings if they are appropriate for a more narrowly tailored condition to be imposed on Mr. Shannon. So, again, the condition must be supported. There was no notice that this would be an issue, and it was applied to him only after the judge had made a ruling. Unless the court has further questions, I'll save the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you so much. Okay, Ms. Pfluger. Good morning.
May it please the court. Excuse me, I have a cold. My name is
water.
No, I'm fine, thanks. My name is Julie Pfluger, and I'm here to represent the government on this matter. The government asked that this court affirm special condition number 10 of supervised release that prohibits the defendant, Mr. Shannon, from possessing any material containing sexually explicit conduct.
Now, the government didn't request an adults-only ban, and the government didn't introduce any evidence that seeing adult material would trigger Shannon's use of child pornography. Is there any evidence to support the idea that viewing material containing just adults would cause him to view the child pornography, or is your argument more on the spillover that of necessity he'd have to? So could you address that, please?
Yes, Your Honor. We are not claiming that viewing adult pornography leads to viewing child pornography. We're asserting that in this case, this is a narrowly tailored condition that is the only practical condition to prevent the defendant, who, as the court has noted, is a somewhat difficult person to supervise, in order to keep him from pushing that line and viewing child pornography while saying, well, the website said they're over 18. I mean, if you look at the facts of this case, the defendant was a pled guilty to one count of possessing child pornography. He was sentenced to 46 months lifetime supervised release. He started his supervised release in August 2010. Now, August 11th, 2011, he got internet. The next day, his internet monitoring software was installed. Within 10 days, he had already violated where he had a webcam. Okay, then September 2011, the internet monitoring software comes up with three different days where he's looking at questionable websites such as teenplanet.org. When his probation officer talks to him, he says, well, the website said they were over 18. I think they're over 18. And then he later says, well, I searched for teen. I like redheaded teens, and I'm not sure if they're over 18. Then
here's my problem.
Yep.
The district court seems to not have provided a basis for its imposition of this condition other than a generalized need for accountability and, you know, to protect the community. So I've been thinking that we might be remanding this for the court to set forth both the factual and legal basis for prohibiting access to adult pornography for an offense that originally involved child pornography.
Your Honor, ever since this case was first decided, Judge Crabb has expressed an extreme concern for the protection of the public. And when the defendant appealed to this court his lifetime of supervised release, this court noted that Judge Crabb didn't trust the defendant, that she was very concerned with protecting the public. Then at his revocation hearing, his own attorney said that his use of the internet to view pornography was very problematic, that it was a very bad choice, and that his treatment providers were rightly very concerned about the pornography that he was viewing. And then Judge Crabb goes on to say, look, I'm going to recognize that you have worked very hard while you were on supervised release and that you did pretty well in your halfway house, but that you have been very noncompliant with your probation officer, and that as soon as you got internet access, you went and looked at young pornography. And that she directed him that he needed to stay away from anything that would look like child pornography. She then goes on to say, look, you do need continued treatment. And she said that while these violations are minor violations, they are very indicative of a much more serious problem. And she sentenced him below the maximum while giving him this lifetime condition, saying that this would hold him accountable, reflect the seriousness of his problem, and protect the community. In addition, the defendant himself, the defense counsel, said, my client needs something that is black and white. That's how he functions. He needs to know where the line is, and that's exactly what Judge Crabb did, Your Honor.
Do you think the district court meant to ban all sexually explicit material, even adults-only material? It just seems a little unusual since nobody raised it. She didn't mention anything about adult material during the hearing. She didn't make any specific findings until she imposed that condition at the end.
Yes, Your Honor, I do believe that Judge Crabb meant to prohibit adult pornography because what she prohibited was any material containing sexually explicit conduct as it's defined by the law, which would include adult pornography. Now, the other cases that the defense...
But you don't think there's a problem with notice here?
No, Your Honor.
That it was never raised, it was never contemplated, her saying, I think one of the ways that we can deal with this is to ban adult pornography and to get some dialogue or even to just give the reasons.
Well, Your Honor, as the defense counsel admitted, they didn't object to this condition when they did have a chance. Also, the kind of notice that defense counsel relies on under Burns has been completely overruled. That type of notice went away when the sentencing guidelines became advisory. Once the sentencing guidelines were advisory, you can no longer count on them, rely on them to say, I know I'm going to get something inside these guidelines. Anything outside those guidelines, I need notice. And
are you arguing that it's okay for a judge to enter a lifetime ban on legal adult pornography?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's what you're arguing?
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, not in...
A lot of people just fainted out there.
Not in every case, but in this specific case, Your Honor, because of the behavior that Mr. Shannon has exhibited. And to go back to your point on notice, Your Honor, the notice that was required under Burns is no longer required. And then if you look at U.S. versus Engle, where there was a ban on all of the internet and no notice was given, what the court said was, we don't need to give notice because this should come as no shock to you. This should come as no surprise. Your crime involved using the internet. Therefore, we don't need to give you notice. This is not something unexpected. As in this case, your crime involved pornography. Since you obviously cannot distinguish or don't want to distinguish or want to push the envelope between child and adult pornography, it shouldn't come as a surprise to you that we are going to ban all pornography. It's analogous to the Engel case, Your Honor.
Ms. Pfluger, could I ask you, the statutory definition that the district judge relied on here does not include the concept of a visual depiction, which is obviously essential in child pornography. So does this condition restrict access, for example, to a book that is just text that discusses sexual conduct?
Well, the sexually, when you look at the definition of sexually explicit conduct, it defines the conduct you can't look at, for example, bestiality, masturbation.
No. It doesn't include the concept of a visual depiction. That's my concern.
Okay, so if I understand you, Your Honor, what the judge imposed was that he could not possess pictures, photos, books, writings, drawings.
Books.
Everything.
Okay.
Right.
So let me try to ask the question again. Would this apply to Tropic of Cancer, the book, or Portnoy's Complaint, or some of the iconic First Amendment test cases that are just books, Ulysses?
Your Honor, I think if you look at the definition of sexually explicit conduct, those type of books, they may contain exhibitions of nude people, but that wouldn't be lascivious exhibition of genitals, because when you look at that, you look at the purpose.
I'm talking about words on the page.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that I know the answer to your question, Your Honor.
Okay. That would seem to be an important question for a defendant under supervision to be able to answer, right?
Can you rephrase the question, Your Honor?
Does this prohibit Mr. Shannon from reading Portnoy's Complaint, for example?
Okay. Well, as sexually explicit conduct is defined, I don't believe it applies.
It is described in the words in the book.
Right. I don't believe it applies to the words in the book. I think what it's applying to...
Why not? From the statutory definition, why not?
Well, when you look at the statutory definition, sexually explicit conduct is sexual intercourse, the like. And when it says books, writings, or drawings, videos, or video games, it's talking about books that contain the pictures or photos of said sexually explicit conduct.
I don't mean to argue with you, but if we look at the definition of child pornography later in the same section, it starts with any visual depiction of the following.
Exactly.
We don't have that in the definition that's incorporated into this condition. And these are the kinds of issues that can be worked out when the issue is raised in advance.
I understand, Your Honor.
Okay. Would this also include, in essence, a lot of R-rated films and cable TV, you think?
Well, the condition says that the defendant is not allowed to possess. Therefore, if the defendant was watching something on the television, I'm not sure that's included in possession. As like if the defendant went to a movie theater to watch an R-rated movie, he's not in possession of that movie.
Can he go watch X-rated movies under this?
I wouldn't conclude that he would be possessing that movie when he's going to watch that movie.
Well, then...
How about if he's just watching it on his computer? Without downloading for long-term memory?
That would depend on the definition of possession.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that having something for a temporary period would be possessing it, Your Honor.
You know, the argument is making me feel that he can't know what he can do. In other words, he can go to a movie house and sit there 24 hours a day and watch, you know, pretty hardcore stuff.
I think the point, Your Honor, is that Judge Crabb was trying to protect children in this case. And if you go to a movie house, they're not going to be playing illegal child pornography. And the Judge Crabb was trying to make a black-and-white rule for the defendant, since that's what he said he needed, a black-and-white rule saying you can't possess pornography because you can't tell the difference. Now, if he's looking at something in public, something that, you know, no matter how objectionable something might be in a movie theater, it's not harming children. It's not illegal.
Yeah, but you said earlier that a judge can ban all legal pornography, right?
What the judge here did was ban the possession of such, not the viewing. She didn't say you can never see it.
Well, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Christensen. 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll start with what we were talking about at the end. I think it demonstrates the difficulty of applying this condition. And to your comments, Judge Hamilton, I think the classic book that I think of in these issues is Lolita, which in some people's view would be considered child pornography because the child is 15 during the story. So it's infringing on those classic points of literature without any findings from the district court. I'll address kind of quickly some of the others. The notice may not be required. Burns may have been overruled. Notice is still required by the federal rules. Rule 32 and 32.1 still required notice about changing conditions. 32.1 is the conditions of supervised release. And in this case, it just can't be something that this court can review on plain error, given the situation we find ourselves in most cases when conditions of supervised release are imposed, because they are often imposed in this same manner. All the facts about Judge Crabb finding protecting the children and community, that's not on the record we have right now. That may have been true, particularly on the original offense, but Judge Crabb did not make those findings on this record, and that's what this court has to rely on to make a ruling. It is a lifetime ban. A lifetime ban against this material essentially rules out any hope of rehabilitation, which is part of the purposes of supervised release. If we're just banning everything, he's never going to get the chance to comply to the tenets of our society.
I would argue the opposite. Mm-hmm. Namely, he can, if therapy's successful, he can ask for modification, but it's much more difficult for a judge to extend a period of supervised release if there's noncompliance and unsuccessful therapy.
Well, I think that it could be tailored so it's not a complete lifetime ban. You know, he did fine on supervised release for a year. They gave him a little bit, and he went too far. I think the total ban is the problem in this case. And, of course, it's problematic given its history, but it's something that has to be addressed given the First Amendment implications of this sort of ban. The courts in Volcker and Loy, which is the Third Circuit, has a lot of good findings on this issue, and we rely on those too, to ask this court to remand. Thank you, Your Honors.
Well, thanks to both of you, and you all have a good trip back, too.